Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have a special part two episode of my deep interview with former Assistant Secretary of Housing, Catherine Austin Fitz. Now in this special part two episode on her Solari report, who's who and what's up in the space-based economy, we're going to look at how the secret system of finance is being utilized to build a massive infrastructure in space, to privatize the long-term investment that Americans have made and deliver it to a small covert group that's ready to cash in on the space economy. Here we go, part two with former Assistant Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, it's great to have you back with us for part two of our deep discussion on the space economy. Now, you've been bringing up the idea of these pension funds as a real mechanism for how the secret system of finance works. In fact, you were telling me that the space economy report following the pension funds Solari report is no accident. And so that was by design. And I've noticed as your Missing Trillions work has gone mainstream on sites like Forbes, for example, you've actually seen some unusual activity with hacking and also some pushback in mainstream and even some alternative media. So my question is, can a report about pension funds cause all of this activity?
Well, this is very simple. So there are thousands of pension fund trustees, they're fiduciaries, and they have the power to start asking questions, right?
Right.
And the question that they have to ask is not, is $21 trillion missing? The question they have to ask is, we have a right, if we're going to buy treasuries, to demand that the federal government comply with the laws related to financial disclosure and financial compliance. We have to obey that law. So why shouldn't the government, you know, and start asking those questions? They can take the consciousness up dramatically on this issue. Because think about it. You're putting the money in, the money's disappearing, you're getting a piece of paper back, which has a lot of value if that asset is in the entity. But if the assets are disappearing and the paper is...
Yeah, it's going right through. It's fascinating, too, because one of the things that I look at when you talk about this is it would never have occurred to me that you would experience really like some kind of aggressive media attacks based around this.
Right, because most people read it and it puts them to sleep. Right? It's yeah. Very, you know, here's what's interesting. When I realized I was going to do this, I almost wanted to write it, and I'm not a very sentimental person. You know, but basically it's very dense stuff.
Yeah.
But I knew I had to find a way to make the information accessible to non-financial people.
Okay, yes.
And do it. You know, now there's no way I can do it short and sweet. You know, somebody could take that and make it into something funny and entertaining. But what I've done is, and I had some great help doing it, but a group of us got all the information together. We organized it and we asked the questions that everybody should be asking to understand what does this mean to me and what can I do about it?
Right.
Because... you know, do not let anybody tell you that your pension fund benefits have to be cut because there's no money.
Right, right.
Well, why was your pension fund buying fraudulent mortgage securities when the leadership knew it was fraudulent? Okay, let's talk about that. So, but there's something else. Why should anybody put a dime in when money's just disappearing out the back door, whether it's your pension fund or the U.S. Treasury? So maybe we do assert jurisdiction over the assets or not, but at a minimum, we come to the table and say, you know something, you know, tell us that we can't afford healthcare.
Right.
You know, there's 21 trillion missing from DOD and we just gifted or lent the banks over 20 trillion. That's 40 plus, you know, my number is 50 trillion.
Yeah.
So don't tell me there's no money because that's not the story. There's another story. Now, I say, well, we'd rather have a base on Mars than for people to have healthcare. Fine. But that's a policy discussion. Let's make it transparently. Let's have that discussion. So I think, you know, the goal of the pension fund piece was to make sure maybe not the folks who want to be entertained are going to read it, but the someone like you or someone like Joseph Farrell, somebody like Richard Dolan, someone like Jack Rappaport can read it and understand. And I have to tell you, one of the greatest things I've ever seen, Someone had posted on a website that has a lot of, you know, sort of debate and comment, had posted something about, you know, the pension funds are bankrupt. And a whole bunch of guys jumped in and said, that's a load of hooey. You got to read Fitz's thing on pensions. And they just started laying it all out. And I realized, you know, this is a small part of the general population. You know, they're small business people, they're engineers, they're entrepreneurs. They understand accounting, they understand balance sheets, they're CPAs, and they get it because they can read that piece and they can get it, and they can understand sort of how the big picture works on an integrated basis. And I thought, this is fantastic. It was kind of like, Houston, we have contact. Yeah, no, for me, it was an amazing moment because I realized, you know, it's off my plate and it's out there, you know, with a posse who represents us.
Wow.
It was a very good feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of very smart financial small investors. There are a lot of very small and, you know, smart small investors. And if you can make the government accounts and the big money accessible to them, you know, there's a lot they can figure out.
Well, it's fascinating. I don't think people really connect the pension funds the way that you do. It's fascinating. And I think it's because people can't think in the terms of pension fund, black budget. It's just, you know, pension fund sounds like something you're just planning on. It's a mild investment. It's not even a sexy speculative investment. It's just a pension fund, big deal. And then to think that there's this entire infrastructure there, it's almost like we have to understand them in a different way.
Okay, so America has $25 trillion in its pension fund.
Well, that'll help you think in a totally different way, yeah.
So let's talk numbers. America has $25 trillion in its pension funds. So the entire U.S. stock market at this point is about $30
trillion. Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
$25 trillion is a lot of money. It attracts a lot of flies. Okay? Yeah. A lot of crocodiles, a lot of, you know... So $25 trillion is very big money, and where that money goes is where our society goes. You know, a civilization evolves based on where it invests its time and money. And the pension funds are the biggest capital provider. One of the things that built the U.S. juggernaut was after World War II, we decided to centralize family wealth into these centrally controlled mechanisms. And that money got put behind making the U.S. multinational corporation the biggest, you know, the biggest player globally with the lowest cost of capital. And then you add the money from the federal budget and defense contracting, and you're building a corporate juggernaut with, you know, we've seen years where essentially they have a zero cost of capital.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and that's how you win.
Wow, that access to capital is crucial.
Yeah, if Europe's PEs are 10 and our PEs are 20, guess who buys whom?
Right.
Right.
You could be described as an investment advisor, as well as you do all this research and you're the publisher of Solari. But how do you, as an investment person, get away with talking about underground bases, UFOs, the space economy? Like, how is it that you can bring those things around in this, you know, world where they don't really talk about those things?
Well, first of all, I really make an effort to say I don't know. You know, it's one of my favorite expressions.
Yeah.
But I grew up in a world where I was trained to believe that I could invent my world.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were basically trained to believe that we could do anything. You want to build a bridge to Mars? Yeah, but it's going to take a long time, you know. And, you know, everything starts with yes. Well, what's involved?
Right.
I come from a world where, you know, if you want to build a nuclear plant, you just figure out, okay, who's the best at that, and you go get them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you were raised with the power to invent your world, and whatever knowledge you need to invent your world, you just go get it, right?
Right.
It's not a problem. And I was amazed when I started Hamilton Securities and started hiring people to realize, oh, you know, they really believe they don't have the power or the right to do that.
Hmm.
You know, it's kind of a different way of thinking. It's almost as though I had the opportunity to grow up in a certain world and have the right to have a certain kind of personal power.
Yes.
So my attitude is, what I'm interested in is seeing families and communities be able to rebuild wealth. And the thing about building real wealth is you need reality. You can't afford, you know, the thing that will get you killed in business is to pretend that things are okay when they're not.
Right.
You have to face reality. And the wonderful thing about working on Wall Street, you know, I was trained by some of the fastest reality facers on the planet. They were amazing. I had one partner from Cuba who built the trading floor at Morgan Stanley and then came to Dillon Reed. Luis Mendez could find reality faster than any human being alive. He'd come roaring out of his office. Somebody would make a trade. You know, in a free market, there shouldn't be profit. Somebody would make a trade and make a lot of money, and Luis would come roaring out of his office screaming in sort of broken English, "You made money! Tell me why I'm so lucky!" You know, and he'd make a proof that this was, you know, a legitimate trade, a legitimate profit. It was amazing. Anyway, but you know, so it was a real, and people who engaged in material emission were real bucket shops. You know, you just didn't do that where I came from. Anyway, so I realized pretty early on that I just had to follow reality if I was going to come up with a for-profit model to turn things around. You know, a for-profit model has to deal with reality. There's no pretending. And all the community development models that I sort of ran into and tried all depended on these phony realities. It's funny, somebody early on when I was litigating tried to get me to come to a socially responsible investment community. And I walked in and, you know, the only people sponsoring were all the guys laundering the big money and, you know, running all the dirty money. I was like, what, you know, what is this, an organized crime convention? And, you know,
that's good.
But if you told them, they just freaked out. You couldn't. They were like, no, they sponsor. We have to. And I kept saying, look, if you're going to sell out, you're not selling out. You know, you're selling out really cheap here. You know, if you look at the money you're getting, it's, you know, if you're going to be a hoodlum, for God's sakes, get a better price. Anyway, so I have some. Have you ever heard my favorite story about the Women's Fund?
No, tell me.
Oh, God. This is during the bailouts. I had a wonderful client who had a high yield bond in a high yield bond fund done by a company that does socially responsible investment. So a lot of these companies will have master prospectuses where all the funds are in one master prospectus. So I went in looking to learn more about this bond fund. I didn't know anything about it. So I look at this women's fund, and this is right during the bailouts. And if you'd asked me to make a list of the 10 worst companies that had done the most harm to women in the world, that was the 10 companies that they were invested in. So I went in and looked at the criteria, and basically what I learned was you could rape and destroy Libya as long as you hired 50 female graduates of the Harvard Business School.
Wow.
And I thought, well, you know. Anyway, so material emission is if we're going to build an economic economy that really works, you know, we've got to start with the truth. Mm-hmm. And the truth is not pretty, because if you look at the model we've been in, we're all complicit. I don't care how virtuous you think you are, directly or indirectly, we're all complicit. And I know, because for the last 20 years, I've tried to educate, warn, talk, whatever. And I know every excuse in the book as to why it's okay for me to take the check and pretend it's not happening.
Right. Okay.
So we're all in this, and we can't turn it around. You know, you can't take 325 million people and put them all in jail. That's not going to work. That's not how we get out of this. So, but it starts with the truth. I used to have a pastor who would say, if we can face it, God can fix it.
Yeah. Right.
And it's true. Because this is going to have to be a real shift in consciousness. And it starts with the truth. And, you know, my truth, the truth I most enjoy, as you know, is mathematical.
Yeah.
So, you know, where are the numbers? Yeah. I see the time. I want to see the money. Let's get down to it.
The world that you operate in, so many worlds, but let's say Solari comes in the financial end. How ready are the financial people to accept the black budget as a reality in its true form?
Well, I think the financial people, the strength of the financial people is they want to see hard numbers. And in many respects, I can't give them hard numbers. I can give them enough information conceptually to then dig in, you know, and find more, because this is sort of going to have to be a shared intelligence experience. But I think we've reached the point where there's enough information and enough concept, you know, that they can start to dig in and figure it out. And for some, it's going to be easier than others. I don't know if you ever know, if you ever had a Myers-Briggs profile done?
Yes.
Okay. So my guess is you're probably an N, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. So you're an N, I'm an N, and we're the kind of people, it's interesting, I have this one friend who's a huge S. You can be an N or an S. Uh-huh. And I'll walk up to a tree and I'll say, oh, it's a tree. And she'll get very angry. She says, you don't know that. And she will go through every twig and every branch and every, and 30 years later, she'll say, you know, you're right. It's a tree. How did you know? Meantime, if we read a legal contract, she can find in a half a sentence, in a comma, you know, she can like flip a comma and change the whole meaning and get you another $100,000.
Right.
So, you know, you want her doing your contract. You want me, you know, finding your trees.
Right,
so,
right.
But 70% of our society are S's. And when someone like me comes along and says, oh, there's a black budget and this and that and 20 trillion in the way, you know, it drives the S's crazy because they can't find the concrete sequential pathway to it. And what they need is they need a lot more people documenting, writing, figuring it out so that they can figure out, okay, well, you know, what do I do tomorrow? So part of it is the ends have to take it a certain distance, which is why you and I are doing this conversation. So the S's can kind of swarm in and start to help out.
I see.
But I think, you know, when I first started to talk about this, if you were a CPA who was a high S, you were like, what is she talking about?
Right.
You know, and you just have to, if you're at the end, you just have to keep persisting. One of the things I discovered is the key to success in a company is getting the N's and S's giving each other energy. And it's going to be the same for the American society.
Right.
We're going to have to find a way for the N's and S's to give each other energy. And the people who've tried to give this, keep this suppressed are masters at, you know, keeping that from happening. It's another one of the many divide and conquers.
Yeah. Yeah. They keep that veil in place with the secrecy. We did a show on the missing trillions where I think we really laid out what you were talking about there.
Right.
So I won't have you reiterate the whole thing.
Have you seen the most recent one though?
No, tell me.
There's a new juicy, Mark Skidmore just published a new report.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And here's what it is. If you go to missingmoney.solari.com and click on DOD and HUD, you'll find it. In fact, he had a graduate student trolling through the DOD-OIG's website, the Inspector General. They had published a new document on the undocumentable adjustments, a report on the undocumentable adjustments.
Okay.
They hadn't let him know. This is a first. In my entire life, Daniel, I have never heard or seen of this. So this sounds like a detail, but this is really, really big. This is a public statement, a public financial report by the Inspector General of DOD. Every number in it is redacted.
Wow.
Every number.
Unbelievable.
Every number in it.
I mean, what could be a good explanation for that?
So the good government world and the, you know, so the agency auditor is redacting the numbers in their reports. So the classified world. And I can just see what happened. I can just see the IG's office saying, no, we're not going to lie. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to break the law and make the numbers. And so the classified guys are saying, okay, well, then we're going to redact, you know, and that's how they resolved. Because the career employees are smart enough to know, you know, if you break the law, somebody can come back around and get you for it, no matter who ordered you to do it. So, you know, so they're holding firm and then the classified guys are holding firm and bam, we get a published report with redacted. No, you have to look at it. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
For you to look at that and say, you've seen a lot of strange stuff.
Well, Skidmore found it and he was in, you know, he's kind of a calm guy. He was in shock. He sent it to me. He said, is this as bad as I think it is? I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God. This is like seeing the, you know, the sky green and the grass blue. It's just, This can't happen.
What would be, like, what's their official explanation for redacting those numbers?
They no longer respond to Skidmore, so we don't have an official explanation.
Right, exactly. It's
just, and why would you want to put them, I mean, at this point, Skidmore's really tried to work with them, from what I can tell. There's no point in putting them in a bad position anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's the thing. If you're in the civil service, this is above your pay grade.
Right.
This is a political issue. It's got to be solved politically. You need to duck. You can't do it.
I see. So, I see what you're saying. It goes on at a deeper level. They're just the functionaries in the front, basically.
Well, it's outside of their pay grade. In other words, if you look at the scope of responsibilities of their job and what they're paid to do, this is something they don't have the legal authority, the legal power to do, and they're not paid to do it. And, you know, this, they could get themselves in a situation, and I've seen civil service get themselves in a situation where they could get really, they and their families could get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, that's when they sit back and say, you know, my job is to do 1, 2, 3, and you need to give me a written instruction to do 1, 2, 3. And if you ask me to do 4, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
You know, that's the right thing to do.
Skidmore is a great addition to the work that you've done. You've done The Missing Trillions since 1999. Your work started on it really in earnest. About 20 years. So it's funny because we see so many people just pick up the term and throw it around or say, like, hey, you know, I'm doing this thing and I'm attributing it to all these other things in the alternative community. And, you know, that kind of like ownership of the topic, in a sense, they don't track it back to where it belongs, which is the work that you've done for 20 years. So I always want to point that out.
Yeah, but right. But I also believe information wants to be free. And what I want to see is I want to see this topic discussed at a very significant, you know, I want it to spread in the consciousness. So anybody who spreads in the consciousness.
No, that's good. What I'm talking about is what I call the Fulfordizing. When it gets turned into the magic, you know, Asian family taking the $21 trillion and giving it back, you know, through secret channels.
Right.
This is what they do with your numbers very often. This is what we see it happen over and over again.
There are all these disinfo schemes around the missing money that then show up, you know.
It's kind of like Rickrolled, but you got Wilcox.
But after you finish sort of explaining the Corey Good phenomena, out comes Tom DeLonge saying, oh, you know, they've been dealing with this horrible thing and you should be real. Don't worry about the missing money. Just say thank you. Like, oh, we're going to take the next step up in the Corey Good.
Well, yeah, the DeLonge operation is way beyond the good stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they rolled him right out. And that's these are the good guys, right? DeLonge saying, hey, they're the good guys, so don't worry about it. Amazing. But the Missing Trillions thing, it's funny because just when you came out with the Missing Trillions, boom, they really started laying that on.
Right.
So that takes us into the Space Force.
Right. It was really funny. I don't know if you realize this. One interview published on late Saturday night, talking about who's who and what's up in the space-based economy, and me talking about the satellite lanes or the sea lanes of the 21st century. And if the U.S., you know, one of the stories in our second quarter wrap-up is sort of, we call it Fortress America, bringing all the money and insourcing a lot of manufacturing and other stuff back to home base. And one of the things I said, if we're going to succeed and extend the life of the dollar, then we're going to need to project power through space. Now, it was really funny because then,
right?
And I'm a little curious about why he did it. Trump comes out and says, you know, we're going to create a 6th branch of the military space force. And then the Russians come out and say, you know, if you put weapons of mass destruction in space, that's in violation of the space treaty. You can't do that. Then a U.S. general comes out and says, well, Russia and China have been putting weapons and then developing weapons in space. And we have this, you know, we're back into the mysterious weapon competition between the Russians and the Americans.
Right, right.
And you're watching and you're thinking, what's going on here?
Yeah.
In fact, my number one question is, what's going on right now? The next year's appropriations are being sorted out in all the subcommittees throughout Congress. You know, so the appropriation cycle, in my experience, is the appropriations all get cut at the subcommittee level. then they get voted out, they make their decisions, and then everybody goes to work in September, you finalize and vote everything out, reconcile and done. Uh-huh. And October 1st, you have the budget. So my question was, what are they trying to white out with the Space Force? Because here's the thing, to create a sixth branch of the military, one, you need Congress to approve. Two, you need the Department of Defense to want to do it and think it's a good idea. And right now, I don't think you have either one of those lined up.
Right.
Now, certainly, you know, if you're Trump and you understand the power of media and you want people, you know, let's say you want young people to want to sign up and work in space and you want to recruit people. You know, Pence has got this space council. You know, I can see the merits of it. The danger in Washington is if you create a new bureaucracy, everybody's going to stop working and start reorganizing, and then you get nothing done for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So if you're Jim Mattis and you really want to do well in what you're doing in space, the last thing you want to do is stop and create a new bureaucracy. You'd rather just get stuff done. So it seemed to me Mattis seemed pretty grumpy that week because he's on record as not thinking this is a very good idea. So what were the what were the sort of the politics of why Trump did that? I don't know.
There's something very strange about it. And I remember when Reagan announced Star Wars, there was this incredible thing with the Russians saying, you know, we'll go into World War III over that. And it became the major thing between Gorbachev and Reagan as trade-off, basically. But it is fascinating because it changes the whole dynamic. I have the Russian quote you just mentioned, actually.
Right, and the Russians and the American military were meeting in Finland at the same time, so.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you had senior leadership of both militaries over in Finland, you know, meeting.
The quote is, this is fascinating, the militarization of space is a path towards catastrophe, Russian spokesman Viktor Bordarev. Is he right?
Yes. Right, but I wouldn't just call it the militarization of space. I would say the ionization of space.
Okay.
You know, what we're doing with the ionization of the air and building the infrastructure in space to do it is we're creating a highly complicated control grid that makes everything on the planet accessible to artificial intelligence. And if you look at the vision, it's basically, from everything I can tell, it's madness.
Yeah.
It's absolute madness.
Is the Space Force then the interlocking piece with the space fence that has been... Elena Freeland's done so much work on it. We've done interviews. You've done work around her stuff, too.
Right. So I wrote a book review of Freeland's new book, Under an Ionized Sky, and then Harry Blaser did an interview, and I cannot recommend it enough. I just keep saying to my subscribers, if you want to understand your reality, you must read this. You must listen to this. So, and it's very interesting. One of the things she had us put up was a video. It's only about a minute and a half of Lockheed Martin giving their representation of the space fence. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's going to stop space junk from colliding.
Yeah, no, it's going to be wonderful, and you'll be able to zip everything around and do everything, and everything's going to be wonderful for you. And it's amazing to read her book and then read see Lockheed's video and compare the two visions to each other. You know, in one sense, they're both true.
Right.
So anyway, but to understand your reality, you need to understand that. But if you look at the ionization of the atmosphere using space, and I suspect the extent to which we put up a lot of space weapons, you know, if you look at what we're up to in space, it's a real challenge because I suspect everybody is in violation of all the treaties.
Yes.
And at some point when you get this far away from the law, you're in a never, you know, you're in a wild west. Space is becoming between the debris and the weaponization ahead of the treaties, it's turning into a wild west. It's turning into a real mess. And that's where the Midianites may kill each other, you know, in space. Now, you know, one theory, and it's, I can't tell you if it has merit or not, is all of the mysterious weapons and space race between the Russians and the Chinese and us is, in fact, you know, us putting together enough arsenal so we can defeat the aliens.
Yes. Yes.
Right. You know, and that was the theory. That's what the nuclear arms race. We wanted to make sure if the aliens took out one, the other had enough weapons to defend the human race.
Right. What do you think of that?
I don't know. You know, it's funny. In some, if you look at what happened, it's more logical. There's more logic to it than you might think. And it might explain why, after they decided that Star Wars worked, that Gorbachev and Reagan together said, let's just, you know, cancel all, you know, let's get rid of all the nukes.
Right.
And everybody's saying, what? What are you talking about? What?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Why can we suddenly get rid of all the nukes?
Yeah. Amazing.
You know, but we're back to pretending that nuclear bombs are the most dangerous technology on the planet.
Right. Well, you made an incredible point about 9/11, which I think applies here to the Space Force. So I want to ask you this. You said that, in a sense, 9/11 was a way to get the black budget back on budget.
Right. I think if you look at the dramatic increase, well, first of all, you change the laws to make it much easier to source more money for the black budget and the hidden system of finance on budget. That's number one. You made it much easier to continue to violate all the financial management laws in the Constitution or in legislation. But you also dramatically increased spending for national security without the presence of a real enemy.
Right.
And so you've increased the money for the national security state by leaps and bounds. You've increased the non-transparency of that money by leaps and bounds. And it was all done on a pretext, you know, starting with 9/11. So what you were able to do, I think the, you know, sort of, if you look at what happened with the litigation on Hamilton Securities Group, my company, that was an example of how painful and expensive the black budget was getting.
Right.
You know, so to keep the lid on the different, you know, sort of funny business and things like mortgage fraud, it was getting more and more difficult, more and more painful. And I think somebody said, we need a breakthrough. And I've always called the Patriot Act the Control and Concentration of Cash Flow Act.
That's great.
But I think the 9/11 helped them move a much bigger part of the black budget on budget.
Is the announcement of the Space Force a new way to move the black budget from off budget to on budget?
Could be. Absolutely could be.
So you've tripped into this, the 21 trillion over two decades. You've brought it out. It's probably a lot more, but that's what's Mark Skidmore and his group at the university could prove.
Yeah, what they've proved is that between 1998 and 2015, that there was 21 trillion of undocumentable accounting adjustments to balance the books at HUD and DOD. What that means in cash terms, we have no idea. But what we know is the federal government has refused to obey the financial management laws aggressively and with intention, you know, for decades. And in fact, what I believe, I just did a great Salier report, which we'll publish as a special with Rob Kirby. We called it the missing money. How would we write the movie? And basically what we said, okay, we're a bunch of script writers. Let's go all the different ways they could have stolen money and how much money they could have stolen. And then let's talk about, if we were writing the movie, which ones we would pick and how we could prove that it wouldn't cause inflation to steal this much money and spend it. Okay. So we go through the whole thing in the imagination room and we'll put it up. But, you know, I absolutely think it could have been more than 21 trillion.
Well, a lot of your research indicates, you know, that it was. But what I find interesting about this is that's starting to pick up. You know, let's say the university, you mentioned something to me that the university came out and talked about it. And then we've seen it picked up on major networks, and we've seen some pushback now, and even pushback against you personally. So I put all those things together. But I think what I wanted to do actually is mention that in your report, you mentioned briefly CERN and Antarctica, and I just wanted to grab your thoughts there on why that's in your space economy report.
Because I think You know, I think whatever is going on at CERN and Antarctica are very relevant to what's happening in space. Certainly just Antarctica as a staging area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knows what else. So I just think Antarctica is very, very relevant. One of the reasons we put Antarctica in the center of the globe is I don't think most people are aware of how big Antarctica is.
Right.
You know, if you've ever really looked at an actual correct representation of Antarctica, we're talking about a huge landmass.
Okay.
So Antarctica is endlessly fascinating, but I really don't know what's going on in Antarctica.
Right, right. So. You did mention that you found Lockheed Martin was operating out of Antarctica or a company related to them.
No, it was in 2015, after the big missing money went, $6.5 trillion in 1 year, Lockheed Martin took their what I believe was their government IT division and spun it out into a new company that had been created when SAIC did the same thing. You know, and given the contracts and things that both of those companies were doing, it's quite remarkable that they would want to get those liabilities off their balance sheet. You know, so they're giving up a big control position. It's almost like a rocket letting go of the booster rocket.
Wow.
So to speak. And so I started to look into, okay, well, what is this Leidos company? What are they doing? And the first thing on the search, I realized they had lots of job position openings in Antarctica.
That's great. Fantastic.
So, well, that's very interesting. So... that's when I put up the article that called Lockheed Cuts and Run. Because it's very interesting, you know, so as soon as the 6.5 trillion, it's almost like they said, okay, let's steal every dime left. And you had 6.5 trillion go missing from DOD and then a couple hundred million go missing from HUD like that, which is a significant amount for HUD. DOD is much bigger. And anyway, so they both happen, and then suddenly Lockheed, who's running the information payment system, certainly a DOD, spins out their division, gets the liability off their balance sheet, and then we published Skidmore's report, and immediately subsequent, a fire breaks out at the New York Fed, because the systems basically have two components. One is the defense contractors running the IT systems, but the other is the New York Fed running the bank systems. The New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government. So Lockheed spins its division out into another company. And then, so we published Skidmore's report the next Saturday night, either the next or the one following, 100 fire trucks end up at the Fed because a fire breaks out at the New York Fed on the roof because somebody is using an old fireplace in the bottom of the building on a Saturday night.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Why would someone at the New York Fed be using the fireplace on a Saturday night?
Wow.
Amazing. I'm just asking questions. I leave the rest to you.
That's fascinating. And it's a very good question. CERN. How did CERN make it into this report?
Well, I think what is happening at CERN is very, very important, as well as with the others. With the other equivalent operations, you know, the Chinese are building one. I think what is happening at CERN is very, very important. And I'm intensely interested in what's happening at CERN. And so it's very often in the unanswered questions. What I try and do with unanswered questions is my attitude is just because we don't know the answers doesn't mean, you know, I think it's very important if there's something important to know and we need to figure it out, it's important to keep it up there as defined as an unanswered question. I think there's no more important question on this planet than who is really running things and why are they behaving the way they're behaving.
Right.
They have a map of the world which is different than ours, and anything we can do to understand who they are and what their map is helps us navigate this world but also have a positive impact on where our civilization goes. So I find it baffling that we live on a planet where everything's a mystery.
Yes, and it really seems to be that way by design. Just fascinating. Catherine, amazing work here. Who's who and what's up in the space economy? a classic Solari report. And of course, you have a new one on the Asian consumer that's just coming out. Also just great. Now we're going to do a special part three bonus episode for subscribers only. We'll call that the deep system of hidden technology and finance. Now, when you subscribe, you'll receive it in your inbox on the weekend of the 29th. Just go to darkjournalist.com and use that discount now while it's available. The special episode will absolutely make it worth it. And of course, you can find all of Catherine's work at Solari.com. I call it Solari University on this show. Catherine, hang in there. We'll do part three. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. Of course, the X series, you can join us live on Friday night at 7 p.m. And we will see you soon.